The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined this Thursday by Mr. Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorchik, where we are going to break down the conference championship round, including the Chiefs at Baltimore. You don't hear at very much for the Chiefs in the playoffs. They're four-point underdogs. Find that a little surprising. We'll get to that a little bit later. The Lions at the 49ers, they're touchdown underdogs. Find that a little bit surprising, too, after the 49ers did everything in their power to lose to the Green Bay Packers. But we'll get to that if we talk about the coaches, with Jim Harbaugh. Has ended his like long hike out of Michigan. Basically, in October, he's like, "Oh, I'm going to the NFL, guys."
Yes,
like couldn't come out and quite say it, but man, he quit. He didn't quit on the team. I guess he didn't quit on the team, but he got suspended twice, and then it was like, "Yeah, I'm going to the NFL," and like kind of like looked really checked out on the sidelines. And then I'm looking it up here, won a national championship.
Yeah,
pretty good outcome for the most checked out coaching season I've ever seen. Harbaugh to the Chargers, Dave Canales. The offensive coordinator for the Bucks. Was he on the Rams or Seahawks staff before, Kyle?
Seahawks.
Seahawks.
Fast riser. Really surprising hire in Carolina. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, this is a podcast. We got a riff, quote unquote, off the top. And I'm not going to try to entrap you guys into saying something controversial. I'm not going to bring up Brock Purdy being a finalist for the MVP. What do you think of that? you got something to say about Brock Purdy? Just come out and say it to his face.
Right? Well, we can't. As a nation, we can't have this happen. I mean, we're hanging on by a thread from just coming apart as a country, and I believe that this would push us over the edge.
It actually would.
And I'm begging the folks who vote for MVP. I'm begging you to consider the health and long-term existence of the United States in measuring Brock Purdy as the MVP, which is honestly pretty funny.
If we're talking about entrapment of our words, what's worse? Brock Purdy making the MVP. I'm just posing the question to you guys, making the MVP ballot, or Patrick Mahomes not making the ballot. Like, he wasn't in the top five. Like, I think they can still be voted for. Like, I get that this wasn't his best season, but like, use your little brain. Who do you think the most valuable players in the NFL are? Name one, and you've done it. You've almost certainly named Patrick Mahomes.
That is what used to be known in baseball as Mike Trout syndrome, where you couldn't get an MVP every single year. Or, you know, Michael Jordan, like, quite frequently did not win the MVP.
Yeah, how?
LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron.
Quite frequently did not win the MVP. I'm sure even some years, like, Wayne Gretzky probably lost it to, like, a defenseman or something. the blue line. Or he sets the tone back on the blue line.
Yeah, he's an enforcer type, and they're like, you got to give it to him. He's Gretzky, broken three jaws this year.
Gretzky's all finesse. And, like, I guess 220 points this year. I feel like he should probably be the MVP.
So I do think we have been saved both as a football community and a country because when Brock Purdy absolutely fell to pieces against the Ravens and Lamar Jackson went berserk against the Niners on Christmas Day, that ended the conversation. And rightfully so. There is no conversation after that.
Listen, I'm tired of all the Brock Purdy hate. He is by far one of the five best players on the San Francisco 49ers. And that's only probably. He's probably at least one of the seven or eight best players in the 49ers.
If you include top 15, we're sure of that.
Absolutely. You can rope him into that. He's top three in the NFC West. Okay.
You know, kidding aside, it is great when there are players that break our brains. Sports would be really boring if like there wasn't like this huge disconnect between like modeling and like the eye test and all that. Right.
Yeah.
Every year. Brock Purdy at like 2036. He's not going to make the top five this year. Finally.
And he does.
And it is like everyone's like, oh, great. We're doing Brock Purdy discourse again. This sucks. I can't believe we're doing this. You know, back in the recesses of your cold, depleted heart, this is exactly what you'd love to be doing. Like if we knew everything, if like all the good quarterbacks look good on film, look good in the stats, it would not be nearly as fun. Maybe it'd be healthier for us, but you don't want that. We need you on that discourse.
I have a 49ers fan who's followed me for a long time who always tweets at me like, why can't you just enjoy the literal last pick of the draft being good? And there's no good retort to it. But,
No, he can't be good. He was the last pick.
This is my relationship with my father. Let me take you back to my childhood days about why I can't enjoy things.
He tries to be so logical. He's like, can't you just enjoy it?
Yeah. It is funny when fans will actually come to you online and say, listen, like, you're driving yourself crazy with like hating my team. Can you just not hate my team? Like there's nothing to hate about my team. And you know, the answer is no, I will not. I will not hate your team. But they do occasionally, they will come to you and be like, look, I like you. I've listened to you for a long time. I think I know you a little bit. Okay. And I'm asking you to take a chill pill.
And almost always they're wrong. Sometimes they're right. I think with Brock Purdy, they are right. And we will talk about Brock Purdy a lot more a little bit later in the show. But we will start with Jim Harbaugh, the prodigal son, returning to the NFL. He's always returning somewhere, returning to Michigan, returning to college. Now he's back in the pros after one of the most successful four-year coaching stints we've ever seen, where he took like a 6-10 awful roster, immediately made the NFC Championship game, made the NFC Championship game 3 of 4 years. He was in San Francisco. He wore out his welcome very, very quickly. But there's some debate over what really happened there. If he wore out his welcome with the team, or if he just wore out his welcome with Trent Baalke, who, as we know, is one of the more controversial GMs in the NFL. Denny, it's really hard. I mean, he's over 60. He's been out of the league 10 years. I guess that's a concern. I feel like it's kind of hard to nitpick this hire, and that it is a home run hire for the Chargers. You before weren't quite as sure. What do you think about Jim Harbaugh coming back to the NFL and the Chargers specifically?
Jim Harbaugh is going to have to change like that. That is absolutely the case. Like, and if he's willing to evolve and to operate differently than he did with the Niners a decade plus ago, then I think they can be successful, because I think, you know, generally he's a good team manager. He's a good organizer. If he delegates to maybe more forward-minded, you know, play callers, perhaps, I think that they can get it done. Now, real quick, if you don't mind, I actually looked up how his offenses, you know, primarily we're concerned about fantasy stuff here.
We don't care about the other stuff. I mean,
so, you know, Niners defense, along with the Seahawks, one of the elite defense of the 2010s. But the offense is going to have to change. Now, I know they had Kaepernick. I know Kaepernick was a mobile quarterback and everything, and that's how it goes with dual threat quarterbacks. But in 2012, the Jim Harbaugh Niners were 31st in pass attempts. In 2013, they were 32nd in pass attempts. 2014, 30th in pass attempts. And from 2012 to 2014, they were middling in both rush EPA and pass EPA. So this whole thing where Jim Harbaugh can get away with it with defense, I don't think is any longer true. I think that he's going to have to really change the way he approaches, especially the offensive side of the ball.
I think the Harbaugh plan is to just be like the best teacher there is, which I think the 49ers teams were like maybe the most fundamentally sound football teams I'd ever seen under Jim Harbaugh, minus like the Colin Kaepernick clock issues. They always had infamously had clock issues and getting the snap off in time. But like they came in that first and like, I was like, wow, the 49ers don't miss tackles. I feel like that is kind of the Jim Harbaugh effect. I not just with the 49ers, the conservatism on offense. I mean, we watched a lot of really big Michigan football games. And like, I don't, maybe let JJ McCarthy throw one pass longer than 7 yards. And Kyle, do you share Denny's, not pessimism, but Denny's belief that he has to evolve and a lot has changed in the NFL in the past 10 years?
Yeah, for sure. But I do think, to your point, like, It's underrated how good of a coach he was in the NFL. Obviously, his teams had talent too. But like you said, he picked up a team that it's not like he walked into a system that was just ready for him to start ripping off NFC championships. He deserves a lot of credit for that. He is, it's like a relatively low limit of games you set for it, but he is the fifth winningest coach all time in terms of win percentage, ahead of his brother, John, who is the second highest or second longest tenured coach currently in the NFL.
Makes John look like a plumber.
Yeah, I know. He makes John look like a plumber, and John's one of the best coaches in the NFL. So he, I mean, those teams were incredible. You said three NFC championships, kind of
three in a row. That's like 3 or 4 years. Yeah. And there were no expectations. I mean, people had given up on Alex Smith. Yeah. Like, it was really through sheer force of like organization and teaching that he pulled this off, which that's always a tough, like, we're going to out coach him. We're going to out fundamental them. That is hard to pull off, but he did pull. They had a lot of talent. A little guy, a man by the name of Patrick Willis comes to mind. A lot of really, really, really like Hall of Fame level players on those teams, but they weren't performing well before he got there. And yeah, I don't know where we're going with this.
Yeah, I do have something to throw in here about Jim Harbaugh's offensive situation here. Last year at Michigan, now I don't have access to like fancy pass rate over expected stuff from college. I do have this. The Michigan Wolverines were 117th out of 133 qualifying offenses in pass rate, 40% pass rate last year. Like you mentioned, Pat, sometimes you would see JJ McCarthy not drop back for like an entire quarter.
That's not even a joke.
Like, it's real. So now, you know, obviously with Justin Herbert, obviously with the pass heavy, we are the pass happy nature of the modern NFL. Like that's got to, if that doesn't change, I really think if that doesn't change like dramatically, it's going to be a disaster for Jim Harbaugh.
Kyle, by the way, are you triggered? Ohio State couldn't beat him. They had to run him out of college. They had to run Harbaugh back to the NFL. They got
Ohio State. I assume we have a winning record against him.
Ohio State's got so much NIL money. They paid Harbaugh to go back to the pros. That's what I heard.
Kyle has never been more maddened.
I assume we still have a winning record against him, I'd imagine.
Oh, you definitely do. I think he's like 3-6 against Ohio State. But they were.
I was gonna say, I know, like, obviously their teams are straight up better than Ohio State for the past 2 years. But I think we like curb stomped the mess out of them for like 10 years.
You know who's not mad at all is Ryan Day. He's the least not. He's the most not mad person ever. I'm not mad. I'm not mad at all. My beard is not eerily black.
Stunningly. It's like there are like scientists developing like black paints that absorb like 99.99% of life. He is covered in that on his chin. It is black.
It is off-puttingly black.
It is. It's too much. Ryan, if you're listening, you just got to let it go, man.
You got to let it go.
Let that gray come through.
So Kyle, you were
side saying. Tangent. I saw someone list like the all-star team for Nick Saban. Like what were the best players all on the team that he's ever coached. And I was like, dude, Ohio, like Ryan Day's Ohio State all-star team might be better than that team. And yet somehow no natties for us. And Saban has like 9, like not that his team's obviously like he had like Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Devonta Smith as his receivers. But like you look at the receivers we've had, Julio Jones is great. I don't know if we're going to stack up to that, but some like generation, like Marvin Harrison is going to be a generational prospect, like Jamar Chase level stuff, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, like all these guys, good quarterbacks. No natties. Where are my natties?
Well, Kyle, I think a point you're making, Ryan Day is a good coach, but like it's still coaching is like the actual art of coaching is probably still underrated. And like being a CEO is great. Being like an amazing play caller. Like Jim Harbaugh is just clearly an amazing teacher of the game of football. Real quick though. So we're talking about the hugely conservative nature of Jim Harbaugh's offenses. That's been a growing complaint with Justin Herbert. You know, he doesn't throw down the field enough. It's always around 7 yards per attempt. What does this do for Justin Herbert? And we're not getting Herbert unleashed. I think we know that. But like, can he make up for it with efficiency and is like a better overall team environment? Like, what is the future for Justin, the immediate future for Justin Herbert in fantasy?
Our buddy Davis Maddock tweeted this out the other day Justin Herbert is tied with Geno Smith, Andy Dalton, and Derek Carr among active players in yards per pass attempt. That's not great. Okay. So 7.1, like you mentioned, Pat. Herbert was 15th in adjusted yards per attempt in 2023, 17th in that category in 2022, 10th in 2021, and 15th in 2020. It's clear that it's a him thing. Like they've brought it, they've done different offenses, they brought in different players.
It's Joe Lombardi.
Yes, it's a right. It's a him thing, and I don't think that that's going to change here. Now, he by many metrics, including like catchable ball rate and on target rate, like he's elite, and avoiding sacks, which obviously we know is very important, and keeping drives on time, scoring points, things of that nature. Justin Herbert is good in that way. But with Jim, you're right though. The Jim Harbaugh hire tells me that the checking down will not. We'll continue until morale improves.
I guess the hope is, though, that it's all this better sequenced and better organized. They do a better job of like taking their shots. And I don't think he can get more conservative than he already has been.
I mean,
he's going back to Oregon with Justin Herbert, by the way. That was
He doesn't look downfield. And I don't know if that's just lack of options. Like, I know that like the entire organization collapses every time Mike Williams hurts his knee, but you gotta have a more resilient roster, and you have to have like here's what they do. The Chargers need to bring in Joe Flacco and say, Flacco, Joe, I need you to sit down with our guy, Justin, and tell him that it's okay to throw into coverage 50 yards downfield. You can do it. It's okay. It will work out sometimes. Sometimes it won't. But sometimes it will, and that's important.
The NFL needed that Flacco wake-up call. Like, there's more than one way to gain yards. Man. And guess what? Terry Bradshaw spent the entire 1970s throwing a million interceptions. And guess what he did? He won 4 Super Bowls. Like, there are more than – I'm just saying.
What? Wait a second.
Terry Bradshaw had more picks than touchdowns, I think, like, at half the years in his career.
I had to have a conversation online the other day on the Threads platform where people were telling me that Terry Bradshaw was better than Dan Marino.
Oh, yeah, yikes.
That's because
even era adjusted, there's no argument there. No.
What are you talking about? I said Bradshaw's not a top 50 quarterback all time. No, there's no argument. Stop.
Hold on. I was on the Kevin Clark podcast, name dropping, the other day, and we were talking about how, there used to be some, he was talking about, I don't know if he quite finished the point, but there was a time in like NFL football where they would like throw the ball and really not even have an intended target in mind. They would just kind of throw it down the field and like see what happened. And like, it's just a lot different than it used to be. Probably because they were about to get like murdered, you know, like sacked.
Yes.
Or I'll just throw this up and see if something cool happens. And you could do it because then the other side was going to do this. It's not like the other side was going to be efficient. They were just going to do the same thing too. Now, you know, surely someone's down there. And they never were.
No. They never were. Lynn Swann was down there once, and we had that on.
Who was that guy on the Cowboys, like Bullet Joe or something? That really, really fast guy. We're exposing ourselves as like knowing nothing before 1999. That really, really, really fat. He was a literal track star.
And Drew Pearson. Cowboys.
Maybe Drew Pearson. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, we'll move on from Jim Harbaugh to Dave Canales, who was the 1 year, I believe, offensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah, just this year. Correct. He replaced Byron Leftwich. That's correct. He was very noted for his Seahawks quarterbacks coach work with Geno Smith in 2022. He'd been on Pete Carroll's staff since 2010, actually going back to USC in 2009. So he's a Pete Carroll disciple. He's only 42, Kyle. He's done a lot of good work. Everybody's been kind of behind. This was the first year, though, where it was like upfront work, like actually gradable work. And the Bucs, we expected to be a lottery team, instead had one of the better offenses, made the playoffs. Not the kind of hire I was expecting David Tepper to make. I was expecting Dave. I guess maybe it is the kind of hire I expected to make as this young guy who's never been a head coach before who might be easily controllable. But I thought he was going to go back to like Recycle City with his coaches. He did anything but. He's taken a big swing in Dave Canales, Kyle. What do you think of this hire? And limited track record, but we like what we have seen from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I expected, trying to think of what I expected from Tepper, I just knew, well, I believed at least, I wasn't going to like it because I think they've been a poorly run organization ever since he bought the team. This is legitimately a good hire. I have no complaints about this. Like, these are the types of guys you should be trying to hire, is the sort of rising star offensive minds. I think the only other sort of option, I mean, like, tons of teams take other options. They're generally bad. We just saw it with Frank Reich. But I think the only other option is to try and get the CEO type and let him continuously churn through OCs. And while that may be a problem, if he's nailing the CEO stuff, maybe that makes it worth it. This is the other more prevalent and newer path, I'd say. And so far, from what we've seen from Canales, it's been really strong performances if he's the one on the field, but really strong coaching, quarterback coaching performances, both in Seattle, really reviving careers of guys who were like at a crossroads of, are they a backup? Should they be in the league, or are they a starter? Are they a backup? And got them over that hump and like over two humps for Geno Smith both times, with strong play calling, good weapons. Like, this is, I mean, I don't want to be too dramatic about Bryce Young, but like, he's at that crossroads now. Like, in a sense, he's at that crossroads now. Maybe he gets another year anyways, but the way he played as a rookie tells me we need to see something soon, or they need to go back to the draft board at quarterback. We've seen Dave Canales work the magic twice in a row. It makes sense to give him a third shot, prove like how good you are at this. And he's probably going to bring a lot of his Buck staff, who's going to have followed him also from Seattle.
Yeah. Bryce Young's basically the point, even though it's only been 1 year, where he needed like a personal tutor type coach and like someone who wasn't just going to leave after one good year. And it might not work. I mean, the odds are probably that it won't work with Bryce Young, just what we saw that rookie year. But if anything was going to work, this is the kind of hire that's going to work, and the kind of hire they had to make to try to revive Bryce Young. And it's an absolute home run from that perspective.
It is.
That's a good point about we as if I'm invested in this, but you don't want to see Bryce Young, if they hire the CEO type of a guy who, like, let's say they went for a Harbaugh, you don't want them to have to continuously churn through offenses, even if one's successful. Even if it's successful, you don't want him to then learn it and then have to go back to the drawing board having only one successful year under his belt. You want that consistency of a good offense that's prevalent year in and year out.
If it'd been a CEO, it'd be like, we're bringing in Pat Shurmur.
Yeah.
Offensive coordinator.
Right. No. I mean, I'm shocked. I'm shocked by this. Like the Panthers did something right. Okay. For the first time in living memory, they did something right. And this is, you know, this could, I think there is like some, some possibility this could go terribly wrong, but also it could go fantastic for this organization and for Bryce Young. Dave Canales, who, by the way, obviously works out. We get it, Dave. You don't have to.
He was Pete Carroll's strength coach.
Like the tight shirts on game day. We get it, man. You're pumping iron. I get it. You look great. Anyway, I mean, this is the guy who coaxed Baker Mayfield to the 11th highest dropback EPA of the season. 11th. Baker Mayfield was a punchline. You know,
Kyle. So was Geno Smith, as Kyle said. It's like, astonishing.
Exactly. And I mean, you look at who Baker was around here as far as EPA goes. He was just behind Jalen Hurts and Tua. He was above CJ Stroud. He was above Geno Smith and Trevor Lawrence. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable resume that Canales brings into Carolina.
Someone who we probably called an unbelievable hire a year ago for the Chargers was Kellen Moore. We thought unjustly fired from the Dallas Cowboys. It was still possible it was an unjust firing, to be honest. But didn't have a great year with the Chargers because no one had a great year with the Chargers. He's interviewing with the Browns, but more interestingly, the Philadelphia Eagles, who are already they're at the point in offense where like they're throwing Hail Marys, basically. Like Nick Sirianni's like, I know people. I got people I can call. And the Jeffrey Lurie's like, well, you better call them.
Yes, right, that's right, exactly right. How it goes.
No, it really is. Like, all right, hey, listen, I swear to God, I can get his number. I thought you said you had his number. No, I can get it. I swear to God, I can get it. Jeffrey Lurie just puts his hand in his face and get out of my sight. He got Kellen Moore's number. They're going to interview him for offensive coordinator. I mean, do either of you have an opinion? What would Kellen Moore do to what was a moribund Philadelphia Eagles offense down the stretch?
All right, English major, geez.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we get it. You've read a book. Look, I actually think that this whole situation is doomed. I'm looking down because I'm actually looking for a quote that I had from Sirianni. Wow, can't find it. Oh, there it is. Okay, folks, I'm going to read this to you because it's important. So talked about, you know, Brian Johnson, who was a rising star in not just with the Eagles, but in the league. Okay, he's getting head coaching interviews. He was let go or whatever, mutual parting of ways, however they're phrasing it these days. So here's what Sirianni said about Brian Johnson's struggles or the offense's struggles. He said, quote, this is my offense. So the criticism on the offense, I think, unfairly goes to Brian. Brian calls the plays. Brian calls the plays. He says that twice. It unfairly goes to Brian. The criticism of this offense should come at me because this is my offense. I was hired to do a job here. And got hired because I was successful as an offensive coordinator with our schemes and different things. And we, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here's what that means. it's going to happen again. Like this is absolutely going to happen again. I'm trying not to overstate it. I would be surprised if Nick Sirianni lasts the entire season next year.
Sirianni, I'm sure he brings some good stuff to the table. Maybe like a one trick pony though, who's one trick got figured out halfway through. I mean, they had so many injury issues. It's hard to say, but that was a rare type of collapse that you saw from the Eagles last year. Howie Roseman shares a lot of the blame for what happened to the defensive personnel, of course, but two really critical hires they needed to make after Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon left, and I guess they didn't nail them. And just he's a great front runner. He was mugging for the camera in 2022. Like, all right, we get it. You're winning the football game, Nick. And then that was the kind of stuff that, like, the second you're losing, everyone's like, get this guy off my TV.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, he's like a CEO type. Like, he should be like a CEO type in that 2 years ago when he was good, it seems like both of his coordinators were really strong coordinators. But, like, he also doesn't really nail the CEO stuff either. No. Like, he doesn't keep the team together in that way. He doesn't have the pipeline of coaches just lined up where, like I think – if D'Amico Ryans, assuming Bobby Slowick gets hired elsewhere, like, he might just be able to keep hiring Shanahan tree kind of guys.
Oh, like, he absolutely will.
Exactly.
Shanahan is like, we'll print these guys for.
He's going to print the guys out. Whereas Sirianni doesn't seem to have that sort of foresight on either side of the ball.
Tell you what number Nick Sirianni doesn't have is Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan would not be letting one of his assistants go there.
No, and also the whole plan apparently was for Sirianni to cultivate coaches within the system, within the organization, and promote from within, and get a little, you know, like functionality, like long term going in the Eagles organization. That's not happening anymore. Nope. That has been cut out from under him for good reason. I guess, well, not for good reason. It was to save his skin, right? And so this is just, it's just inevitable. Next year, this is January, so I get it. But next year, I believe, will be just a completely wasted year for the Eagles. Just a wasted year. Just move on.
It's kind of a memory hole, too. Like, he had to give up play calling duties in 2021. Like, he's already, like, cycled through, like, all, like, the desperation gambits.
And there's nothing left. There's nothing left but fire. But being fired, that's it.
I do agree with the decision. All that being said, I'm going to try to remain consistent. I said, it's pretty sure it's doomed, but you have to give it one. You have to make sure. When a guy was that good last year, you have to make sure that, like, he's actually just doomed. But they're probably doomed. We are doomed to not be able to finish if we don't take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. The Ohio State is looking to keep pace with the frontrunners in the Big Ten women's basketball standings, and they'll have a chance to do so on Thursday evening when they face Illinois. Watch the Buckeyes and Fighting Illini showdown at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on Peacock Thursday evening. And don't forget, find all your favorite NBC Sports shows and Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The promo only says Ohio State, but then I saw Kyle. I knew if I didn't say the Ohio State, you get slapped with a lawsuit.
He would start screaming again.
Yeah. So yeah, but the NIL money, they have enough to sue me for not saying it. so Kyle has been really not mad. I think he's never cared about the Ohio State slander, I think, until today. And,
you know, Kyle is the crying laughing emoji. and when you use that, you've never been more mad in your life.
You've never been more mad. Kyle doesn't get mad. We will move on to previewing the AFC and NFC championship games. Hosting their first AFC championship game in franchise history, a surprising fact. The Ravens are trying to advance to their first Super Bowl in 11 years. They must surmount the mighty Chiefs, Denny Carter, who, in my opinion, are surprising 4-point underdogs. Not that they should be the favorite, I guess. Well, I think they should be the favorites. I think they're going to win. But 4 points feels kind of high for me. The Ravens were severely tested by the Texans in the first half of the division round before going bulldozer mode after the break. What do the Ravens need to do to beat the Kansas City Patrick Mahomes-led Chiefs?
They need to not throw into the teeth of an elite secondary. And I think that they're not going to do that. I wrote in my funnel defense report, which you can find on the site, that I everything points to the Ravens being ultra run heavy in this game. I think they're going to go back to the Lamar roots. And I know 2 weeks ago I wrote a really, really long piece on, you know, the Ravens got to drop back and throw it. That's not happening this week. For better or worse, it's not going. That's not going to happen unless game script goes sideways and they have to abandon the run. But one stat that jumped out actually was that the Ravens are the best team in the league in running out of shotgun. Okay, it's a, you know, what you do when you have Lamar Jackson and teams are quaking at the prospect of him keeping it going around the end. So they're the best in the league. The Chiefs are bottom six defending that sort of run. So I think that everything lines up for them, for Lamar to have double digit rushing attempts, for Gus Edwards to have double digit. Maybe you get Justice Hill. Maybe, honestly, I know, look, Dalvin Cook is what it is. Like, the guy's not what he used to be, but they seem to like him. I could see Dalvin Cook getting involved here if game script goes right.
We'll have to talk about that when we get to the DFS section of our show a little bit. But Kyle, the Chiefs offense, so Danny talked about the Ravens offense, a really good breakdown of the Ravens offense. Check out the funnel report, by the way, the central reading during these playoff weeks. But Kyle, the Chiefs offense is looking increasingly back. I kind of wondered in the wild card round, were they just taking advantage of like a shell-shocked Dolphins team in horrible weather? But they looked just as back, I thought, against the Bills, even with Mecole Hardman donating turnovers again. Got to get this guy off the field. But is this offense back enough to beat the best defense and just what has been the best overall team in football for almost all of 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I try and base so much of my analysis off of like math and our understanding of the physics drive the game. But man, the Mahomes playoff vibes, which are backed by math, are immaculate. This guy, he's really good in the regular season. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Arguably the MVP, despite apparently not being in the top five in the MVP race or whatever. But man, when this guy gets in the playoffs, he just has another gear. In his career in the playoffs, he's averaging 0.31 EPA per play. That would have been second in the regular season this year, first last year, first the year before that. Games with over 0.5 EPA per play, he has six. Brady and Peyton Manning have a combined six. He's averaging nearly twice as much EPA per game, which is just the cumulative EPA, than Brady did in his career in the playoffs. Like, he is, I mean, he's just another animal, and they unleash him more, both sometimes as a runner, a little bit more as a runner, but they just feel more comfortable letting him sling it in the playoffs. So volume is there. The best quarterback passing the ball is there. And he's a little friskier as a runner. Like, I don't know how you beat this guy in the playoffs. And I think three of those 0.5 EPA per play, which is insane. Like, that would be over the course of the season, the best quarterback we've ever seen. Like, talk about like Brock Purdy setting records. It would nuke Brock Purdy's numbers. Those all come against the Bills somehow, which is just so infuriating if you are rooting for the Bills, because he brings his A++ game to the Bills every single time. And like, that's the only way to beat him really, is if he isn't the absolute hero that he is almost every single game in the playoffs. He's so good.
Well, that's just, to get into narrative-based analysis, that is what makes Mahomes, I feel like, so unbeatable in the playoffs. He will never make the mistake. He just will not make the mistake. I've never seen a more poised player, including Tom Brady. I'm not trying to be a prisoner of the moment, but even Tom Brady will go meltdown mode occasionally. It was pretty rare. Oh, yeah. I mean, our final memory of Tom Brady in New England was going meltdown mode against the Titans.
Oh my gosh.
The wild card round. And that was very rare, but it did happen to Tom Brady occasionally. It's going to happen to Patrick Mahomes at some point, but he's never once. Patrick Mahomes has never once, except for maybe the Bucs Super Bowl, he's never even been criticized for a playoff performance. Even the Bucs Super Bowl.
Dude, he was incredible.
He's heroic. Yeah.
It was heroic. And his stupid receivers dropped so many, and his linemen, which to their credit were all backups, could not hold up. And honestly, I thought he played an incredible performance. You don't get to see it in the stat sheet, but like, He was a hero, and everyone let him down at every turn.
Absolutely.
The Bengals one would be the one you point to. He didn't play his best game against the Bengals, and they lost for that reason.
They did. So I guess he's done it once.
Once, though. He's played like 15 games already, and he has won like...
Even the Bengals game, he didn't make like the mistake. You know? Yeah, like, yeah. He's just so absurdly poised, and I understand, of course, why the Ravens are favored. They were the best team all year, and it's at home, but I mean, to me, like the favorites in my heart are the Kansas City Chiefs. And like, until they're the AFC champions, until proven otherwise. And I don't know where I'm going with that. I had some more narrative based analysis. Mahomes,
mentioned in the final report, I really don't see a situation where the Chiefs try to be balanced or establish it against the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens rush defense is like frightening, like on every level, yards before contact, after carry, yards before, I forget which one I started with. Anyway, it's all very good. And Isaiah Pacheco's banged up, has a toe. I'm not saying that that's the end of the world, but I do think this is a 40 plus drop back game for Mahomes. We talk about the DFS implications of that, but if they want to win, and I think they do, then they are not going to try to like stubbornly run the ball here.
The only concern I've had all year about the Ravens, and maybe with their run defense, is I thought a lot of times their defensive numbers were inflated by a really, really soft schedule. Like they were kind of like the Eagles this year, where like every week they were playing like DTR, or like Kenny Pickett, or like Will Levis. Like they had one of those like really crazy quarterback sites this year. Then one of the first real quarterbacks they played was Matthew Stafford, and he lit him up, which was very surprising. They did, though, then return the favor against Brock Purdy. They totally shut down Trevor Lawrence. They totally shut down Tua and company.
But Stafford is better than Purdy by like a long shot. What? Is that a controversial statement?
I don't know. I actually don't know anymore. I have no idea. With Brock Purdy, my brain is just totally broken. So it's easy to have your run defense show out when you don't even have to worry about the quarterback.
Yeah,
the Chiefs, I feel like, might be emboldened in the run game after what they did last week.
They could start that way, sure, but they will learn the tough way that that's not going
to
happen.
I remember the last narrative-based point I wanted to make. Mahomes is always so poised. It was not a poised first half from the Ravens. It seemed like every John Harbaugh playoff game since the Super Bowl, basically, like they're scared, like they're making like uncharacteristic mistakes. I was like, man, they're in trouble. It was, you know, 10-10 at halftime. And then, though, it felt like they exercised the demons in the second half against the Texans, where they're like, they were basically like, we're not letting this happen again. Like, we are the better team. And they just blew the Texans out of the building in the second half. So that was a big test for the Ravens past.
So Joe Thuney, left tackle for the left guard for the Chiefs, is dealing with some sort of injury, with
chest injury, I believe.
The chest injury, right. He did not practice on Thursday. That's huge. Like that, it's going to be a huge factor. If he's out, I really think that we have to adjust everything. If he's out,
they're going to give him like a horse tranquilizer or something.
Sure. But I'm just saying, if he is sidelined, I think we could have a situation like the aforementioned like Super Bowl against Tampa, right? Where the Ravens are able to get there with only rushing four, right? And when you're able to do that against anybody, including Mahomes, the task becomes much more difficult.
A few other housekeeping notes. Mark Andrews is practicing in full. Kadarius Toney is practicing in full. I kind of feel like the Tony Hardman, as the world turns, it's going to be Hardman who's down this week and Tony who's up. Like,
yeah, right.
It's to the point with Hardman, like they have to save themselves from themselves. Like you can't even – he can't be on the 46-man roster because you're going to use him at some point if he is. And it's going to be a catastrophic error.
Oh, you had an iconic Chekhov's Hardman tweet. I love that. It was very I know that's probably not a reference a ton of people get, but like I
yeah, the Chekhov's gun is like what's the principle, like every story element needs to be necessary. Like, and if there's a gun and that appears at some point in a book, like it's gonna go off at some point. And yeah, I said Mikal Hardman was Chekhov's turnover. Like if he's in the game, the turnover is happening at some point. And then, of course, he fumbled it out of the end zone.
It was great.
And I mean, really, like, you can't play it. He seriously cannot be active because you will play him if he's active and he will swing the game. So with all that being said, we started getting into like kind of the DFS options there. Denny, what's like a Ravens X factor / some DFS option, like kind of an X factor offensive player, which I'm sure also translates to DFS.
Right. So I'm thinking it's Justice Hill, who over the past four games is averaging a meager 7.1 yards per attempt. Really, really quite efficient. Our guy, Justice Hill. Gus Bus is obviously has the touchdown equity. He's going to get all the inside the five stuff. So what can you do? Justice Hill is running more routes. I do think that, I mean, just look, it's a two game slate. You got to get different somewhere. You just have to, especially in large field stuff. So Justice Hill profiles as that. And then if you want to get really nasty, really down and dirty, please, you go with Dalvin Cook, hoping that the Ravens just are absolutely focused on making him a thing. He ripped off an 18 yarder last week. The rest was not very good, but man, the Ravens just seem super excited about Dalvin. So, you know, go with it.
It's been a while since one of your DFS options made me feel physically ill. So that's actually a good sign.
It's awful.
And by a while, I assume you mean 7 days.
But no, remember, I had to scold him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't sick enough.
Right. I said Brock Wright, and you were like, no.
No, Brock Wright's when you got back on track. Brock Wright when you got sick. You must have said like Josh Reynolds or something like
that. That's probably it. Yeah, it was probably that.
Yeah, anyone can say Josh Reynolds.
Josh Reynolds, the most normie play of all time.
Yeah. Kyle, same question for the Chiefs. Potential offensive X factor and DFS option.
Yeah, I hope we don't see any X factors, man. Just play it straight. No, yeah, X factor is Mecole Hardman fumble through the back of the end zone. And if it's not Mecole Hardman fumble through the back of the end zone, it's Kadarius Toney tipped interception, of which he has two this year and didn't even play late in the season. I think somehow him and you want to like. You'd never guess in a million years who the second player who had two tipped passes into interceptions, Tank Bigsby, somehow. But like,
what
it is? Yeah, I know. And I literally found the film for both of them, and it is correct.
You could put me on a desert island and give me a thousand guesses, and I would have.
Yep, I know. No, it's so strange. And I found the footage from both games, and it is indeed correct. The Toney ones are much more memorable. He's better than Mecole Hardman. Don't let us find out. Don't. He's probably better than Mecole Hardman. I really don't think we need that question answered at this point. I do think, as you alluded to, he'll probably take some of that Mecole Hardman gadget player role.
He has to.
You got to try something other than Mecole Hardman. Who do I think runs the most routes outside of the obvious plays? It's probably Justin Watson. But even Justin Watson's role has been kind of scaled back in recent weeks. In their playoffs, it's only been 55% of the routes. He's the only receiver, not named Rashee Rice, obviously, with over half of the routes. They just clearly don't have a plan at receiver two or pass catcher three, if you obviously include Kelsey, which is fine. Just throw to Travis Kelsey and Rashee Rice as much as you can until defense forces you, absolutely forces you, to do something else. And we have kind of seen that in the playoffs. So Justin Watson, like Denny said, you gotta try something different. You know, we talk about like the Chiefs have to try something different with like Mecole versus Toney. In large field tournaments, you have to try something different or you're just going to end up, you know, building literal duplicate lineups. Justin Watson's maybe that guy, but frankly, like I like Denny's Justice Hill as a flyer better than I like my own Justin Watson in this case.
MVS is 62 yards in the division round, is second most of the year. I was going
to say MVS might be
second most of the year, man.
I know. That was a bad sign for the Bills when he caught two passes. Like, yep, it's over.
Also, very much consider two tight end lineups on DraftKings. Those get.
Well, you guys, someone told me to do that last week, and guess how much
money it didn't work one time.
So much money I won.
It didn't work one time. We gotta X out.
It actually did work too. I think the tight ends were the problem.
I was gonna say. I think the best tight ends weren't the problem. Were Kate Otten and George Kittle last week? I think.
Well, you could have thrown Otten and Kraft in there.
I was really devoted to an awful defense last week. I'm trying to think of who it was.
Oh, Packers? No.
No, it might have been the Packers. Who did the Lions Texans? Play?
Bucks.
I had full exposure to the Bucks defense. Oof. And we're going
up. With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up?
because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We're moving on to the aforementioned Detroit Lions. Pushed to the brink by the aforementioned Green Bay Packers, the 49ers are nevertheless touchdown home favorites for the NFC title game against the Lions as they try to advance to their second Super Bowl in 4 years, Kyle. Debo Samuel isn't practicing at road. He did return to practice on Thursday. After his divisional absence, mid-game absence, seemed to nearly cost San Francisco the game. How big of a loss would that be? And what is the 49ers' recipe against the Lions? Where they were just on – after Debo went, man, it's like they had never played football for like a quarter and a half. And they did recover barely to see it. What are you expecting from the 49ers against the Lions?
Lots of horse tranquilizer. They are putting giving the man the horse medicine, and he is probably playing. Return to practice suggests he is, although it is certainly still undecided. Should he not play? I think it would be not as catastrophic now with something we've talked about, Pat, is when you have a week to prepare happening mid-game. Like we talked about this on the recap show. The mid-game plan, which I don't think would have been the we have a week to prepare plan, was come out of the second half with a Juwan Jennings end around or whatever. I think that gets written out of the script if Debo doesn't play. Like some of those things get ironed out. I also think it means we see far more George Kittle. And yeah, it is a big blow to the offense over the past 2 years, regular season, when we've seen this team without Debo. They've averaged 1.2 fewer points, a staggering 1.4 fewer yards per attempt, and 26 fewer passing yards. Like, they're a worse team without Debo. Those splits do also include games Purdy didn't play, and some of those include games where they didn't have Trent Williams. That was earlier this year, I believe, was the non-Debo. The non-Debo games, they just coincidentally overlap with the non-Trent Williams games. So it's hard to know how much those splits matter. And I think I'm comfortable giving Kyle Shanahan enough credit to say they will have a better game plan than they did in the second half last week if Debo doesn't play. Though I kind of think he does.
I think the more maybe more important splits than Purdy with and without Debo, because you have the Trent Williams stuff in there, is how he's performed against top half secondaries versus bottom half. Folks, I looked into it, and it's in my column if you want to check it out. It is quite the difference. Okay, Brock Purdy goes bananas against bottom half, particularly like bottom 10 secondaries. And guess what the Lions are? They are clearly. A bottom 10 secondary. I do think, as a Brock Purdy skeptic, I'm not going to say hater, as a skeptic, I'm guessing that it's going to be a really, really tough Sunday night for me, because I think Purdy will rip these guys up through the passing game. And I think the Niners will be largely forced to take that approach, because the Lions are really solid against the run. I'm not saying CMC is like off the table. I am saying that they have the weapons to destroy this Detroit coverage unit.
So you mentioned the Lions' defensive concerns, but really it's been the one criticism of the team all year. They have not adjusted, and they haven't even become like an opportunistic defense, really. I mean, they kind of have, but like when you have a bad defense, you need to be like the Sean Payton team, where you need to create like a turnover-creating defense. You have to be opportunistic is the euphemism we always use. And they haven't even been that, but big concerns on defense for the Lions, Denny. But on offense, I mean, how do the Lions spring this upset? Even if the 49ers looked kind of vulnerable last week, it's so difficult to believe Jared Goff is like going to have what it takes on the road. Yeah. What do the Lions have to do?
Limit Jared Goff dropbacks. I mean, I'm talking like, I think you mentioned the other day, Pat, on the pod, like 24 Jared Goff dropbacks. I actually think that's too many. I think that it should probably be like below 20 if they really want to win this game. And if the Lions win, If the Lions win, I think it's 17-13, 17-16, something like that, right? If the Niners win and you know, do what they're going to do against this Detroit secondary, it could be something like 37-6. Okay, like it could be really ugly for the Lions. But I think the Lions are built to exploit this 49ers defense. This rush defense, I believe I was screaming from the treetops last week. I was saying they could be had. Aaron Jones can have a big game here. And man, Aaron Jones was fantastic. Huge gains all over the place. Super efficient. The Packers rush EPA was way, way higher than it has been this season against these Niners. And it's because these guys are not defending the run. They're not reading all that. They're trying to get to the quarterback. They want their sacks. And that's fine. But Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, I think, can both get home. You want to talk about getting different in your lineup, you throw both of them in your lineup.
What about Craig Reynolds, too? Just all three of them.
Yeah, you might as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the Lions, they have to basically shot-for-shot remake of how the Packers started the game. I think the Packers had to settle for a field goal on their opening drive. Was it a field goal or a touchdown?
It was a field goal.
But they scored. They held the 49ers to a field goal in their scripted opening drive, I believe. It's going to be one of the games where the opening drives are always very important. The Lions have to establish an immediate lead, and they have to they allow the 49ers to front run.
Yeah.
I mean, just Jared Goff is not going to come back.
No. And so the Lions, like most smart offenses, and obviously Ben Johnson is very smart, attack the middle of the field at a high rate, one of the highest in the league. The Niners defend middle of the field passes. Moff, the kids are calling it Moff passes. Better than almost anybody. Okay. So the Moff is not going to be open for our guy Jared. They're going to have to establish it.
Please don't ever say that again.
Moff.
Kyle, 49ers X Factor DFS option, things of that nature.
Yeah. George Kittle, I mean, it's not a surprising one, but I do think even if Debo is limited, we're going to need to see more of George Kittle. And that's because that's what they've done when Debo's previously missed time. This is from John Daigle. You may remember John Daigle, our former colleague. In the six full games without Debo Samuel in George Kittle's career, George Kittle has a 25% target share, 90 yards per game, 26% targets per route run, an elite 3.3 yards per route run, over 20 fantasy points per start. He is a superstar. It's not surprising. When they have to give him the ball more, he crushes. The only qualm we've ever had with Kittle's game is like, they got a lot of mouths to feed. Sometimes he just catches two passes. But even with those two passes, sometimes it goes for 80 yards and a touchdown. The problem for him has never been a lack of talent. It's simply that they run the ball a lot, and they have a lot of guys who deserve to get the ball. When that tree narrows to force him into the action more often, you see that he is pound for pound one of the two most talented tight ends in the NFL.
Absolutely. He needs 8 to 10 targets. I don't really care who's on the team. Like, their usage of George Kittle has been criminal.
I agree, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer, I would say, but like statistically, it could have been off the charts,
it could have been special.
Really, truly, like it could have been like a Gronk situation.
Every time he gets like more than six targets, he gets like 167 yards. Mm-hmm. Like, it's totally nuts.
He doesn't. You mentioned Kevin Clark earlier. He's getting a second shout out on the show.
Wow.
I heard him say that the Niners coaches have really taught these guys to not go out of bounds and like just to keep running. And at first the guys like Kittle and Debo were like, I don't know if that's going to work, but it turns out it works because guys are just falling off of Kittle as he's running down the field every time he catches a ball.
Yeah. That makes so much, like, what if we actually made the other team tackle us?
Yeah.
Maybe other teams should look into that.
Especially when Kittle, I mean, both of them are like incredible yak guys. It's not like Tyler Lockett falls down after he catches the ball all the time because like, yeah, he's small and like he's gonna get hurt. Like,
yeah,
Debo is a butcher knives level runner after the catch, and Kittle is one of the best athletes bar none in the NFL. Like, those guys should be making the other team tackle them, test them every time.
I guess they do both get hurt a lot too.
Debo also, Kittle, that is true.
But quite an innovation. Make him tackle you instead of just
Debo. Debo is maybe like the guy I think of when I think of a guy who I cringe when he gets tackled anywhere on the field. Is he going to get up? I don't know. And last week he didn't get up on the first three times he was tackled.
No. And then the job was finally finished, and man, it'd be crazy if he plays, but yeah, I'd say agree with Kyle. The limited practice suggests he's going to play. Denny, the Lions were where you got accused of not being sick enough a few weeks ago with the X Factor and the DFS stuff. What do you got for us for the championship round?
I don't know. The kids are calling him JMO. Okay. Yes. Maybe it's JAMO. I'm not totally
sure. I say JMO.
I say so.
Yeah. Jameson Williams. He's running a decent route rate. I have it somewhere in my article and I can't find it right now, but in two postseason games, it's around 70%, I believe. It's nothing compared to Josh Reynolds, who was at 88%. I'm gonna get disgusting with Josh Reynolds. I mean, like, I'm gonna have him in every line.
But there's
really nobody else. Like, you can't, like, this Detroit offense is pretty condensed. I do think Amon-Ra is a fade.
Ooh, this is a hard game to get sick in. You're absolutely right. The 49ers, like, you're playing Juwan Jennings. Guess what? You're not winning today. It doesn't even in a two team slate. You're not winning.
Yeah, the two game slate is really, really tough to get weird.
Even like in a single game slate, I'd say you're not winning if you're playing Juwan Jennings. Like, it's just not happening.
Maybe.
I mean, Ravens are bar none the best team to get weird with because they do actually run their receiver core relatively.
Nelson Aguilar.
Dude, that was going to be my example. Is they like Nelson Aguilar, Rashad Bateman, like those could be the guys who spike for one touchdown, whereas like there isn't a fourth receiver on the Lions. Like, it's Donovan Peoples-Jones running 3 to 5 routes, if that, or it's Brock Wright, who, now that we know Sam Laporte is healthy, doesn't really play very much. He's out there to block. So I think the Ravens are easily the best team to, like, if you don't know their name, oh, they play on the Ravens? That's actually not a bad DFS play.
All right. You went sick. I'll give you sick. Okay. If Khalif Raymond can suit up for this game, folks, we're playing him.
Yeah, you know, that's a real good one.
He's going to run 12 routes, and on one of those, he's going to catch him.
I'm looking at the division around box score. Chris Conley. Do you guys know what team he's on? He caught a pass. Caught a pass in the divisional round.
Yes, he plays for the 49ers. Amazing, amazing appearance. I was shocked.
Ray McLeod caught a pass. Was this like a fake punt or something? Ray McLeod was in the game. Yeah, the aforementioned one carry for -1 yards for Juwan Jennings. Yeah, there's just nowhere to get weird with these two 49ers and Lions teams. But Ravens, I totally agree with you guys. That's where the weirdness. Denny, who DPJ on the Lions, like, that just didn't happen.
No. It's like Kyle said, I mean, you, like, if he gets 3 routes here, especially because, you know, teams get super serious about their playing time at this time of year, obviously for good reason, because they want to win. DPJ is not going to see the field.
No. What happened to that guy? It started so promising.
I mean, he got away with it bigly.
He did get away with it. I guess you can't get away with it forever. You can't keep the podcast going forever. It is over today. Check out the Funner Report. Check out all the blurbs. Kyle and I were writing stuff. It's just not on the site right now.
I have something that came out yesterday or 2 days ago. Review of the rookie running back
class. Wow. Hell yeah. That's a really good one.
It's a two-parter. Like, the second part's out probably by the time you're listening to this. It'll be tomorrow.
Yeah, it was a good read, Kyle. I like that one.
I'm trying to finish my seasons in review article, and I need to name it something more clicky. If you have a more clickbaity type, it's like an end-of-season recap.
You'll be done with that by April.
I know. Someone can think of a more clickbaity title for that. Please tweet it at me. I need people to click it. I know, Denny, it's already gone like masterpiece mode.
And oh, no. You never go masterpiece mode.
I'm not going to have it done before the Super Bowl, I don't think. We'll see. We'll see.
People so long from now.
It's actually not. Well, Denny and I don't know if you heard, we're going.
It's 2 weeks from now, man.
It's like we're down to like 10 days. It's 10 days.
Oh, there's zero way it's 10 days.
Week and a half. No, for Radio Row, folks.
That you have to go. I see.
Yeah. We got to go.
By the way, Joe Thuney is, per Adam Schefter, unlikely to play.
It's a messed up pec, I believe.
We'll see what horsey medicine they
get. I didn't know it. I hadn't seen that report. So that's, just remember that, folks, when you're making your lineups.
Remember that. Remember to listen when we return next week. Remember to keep it locked at rotoworld.com. For Kyle, for Denny, I'm Pat. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back later.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well.
So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.